So welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk, where tonight I'm joined with Dave, and we're going to discuss Ireland's match against South Africa last weekend in Lviva, and next Saturday's match against Samoa. So Dave, disappointing old day, disappointing crowd, disappointing atmosphere.
Yeah, everything from start to finish was just, it was a disaster, really. I mean, the whole day was symbolised by the jerseys, the commemorative jersey that ripped to shreds during the first half and didn't even make it out in the second half, so kudos to Puma there. But the whole thing, I mean, there's been an awful lot of talk about, you know, exactly why 15,000 people didn't show up. I mean, people have put forth the argument that at €100 the ticket is too expensive. People have put forth the thing that putting the four matches together initially as they did means that people have to commit a significant chunk of change and time to the matches. And people have put forth the argument that people just don't like that new stadium.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the stadium. I'm not sure about not disliking the stadium. I just think it was bundling the four tickets together initially, then bundling two together.
Yeah.
And the psychological impact of having a ticket for £100 in every single seat in the stadium. You know, going back a few years ago when we played in the old Lands End Road, you know, probably half the attendance was paying significantly less because they're on the terrace.
Yeah.
And there was also a graded structure of prices throughout where you sat. I mean, if you sat on the east lower, or say the west lower, you probably paid a higher price than you did up in the gods in the,
well, that's, in the east. That's a very good point. I mean, if you spent €100 on a ticket for a Saturday and you found yourself between the 22s, I mean, well and good. Hmm. But if you spent £100 and you found yourself in row A or B of the north stand,
yeah,
I mean, you'd be absolutely raging, like, because basically it's £100 to watch the match on television.
Yeah, but the ticket prices actually, believe it or not, haven't increased all that dramatically over the years. You know, like, say, last 2 years ago in the Six Nations, it was £90.
Mm-hmm.
Last year's match against Australia was £70 for the lower Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, okay, it was a little bit of an increase, but not a dramatic
increase. Well, it is. It's, as you said earlier, it's that important psychological Rubicon of €100. Yeah. I mean, once you hit the ton, then people expect something for that €100. And sadly, what happened on the pitch didn't really match up to the price they paid.
And also, don't forget, you know, people have been at, say, Leinster Munster only a few weeks before for half the price.
For half the price, and but nearly double the crowd.
Well, double the crowd, but, you know, they'd seen, you know, 30 or, say, certainly 20 world-class players playing. And, you know, I don't think that interest is there for the international, for, say, a match that doesn't mean all that much.
I think certainly as far as the autumn internationals go, people have elevated provincial support above the national team. Now, it's for the Six Nations and for the World Cup, obviously the national team, uber alles. But for the autumn internationals, and especially the game against South Africa, which wasn't even a proper autumn international, it was an out-of-window game, people were less than worried about it. I mean, generally in the run-up to an international all week, people are talking about the game and there's a bit of a buzz around town. There was nothing like that at all. I still remain to be convinced that the IRFU, the professional side of the IRFU, made quite the mistake that people are accusing them of making. I think that they'd be happy enough with the revenue stream. I mean, we were talking about it earlier and we did a few sums. And
but you probably think that the IRFU were responsible for Kennedy's shooting as well.
No. I think the AIL clubs are responsible for Kennedy's shooting. The IRFU are responsible for the Bay of Pigs fiasco. But I think that, you know, they'll be happy with the revenue. I mean, there was a difference of a couple of €100,000 between a full house at €70 and what they got at €100, including the long term ticket packages. So I don't know if certainly the bean counters would be happy enough. People have said, oh, well, they've lost out on all that extra revenue from merchandise and from the pints and the burgers. But to be perfectly honest, in that stadium, there's not enough space to serve an extra 15,000 people overpriced burgers and warm beer.
Well, it's going to be shocking, I think, at the weekend against Samoa.
I think the crowd will be huddled around. It'll be like Murrayfield, so it will.
Yeah, I mean, if they get 20,000. I mean, there was 5,000 at the training session last night.
Well, you see, the appetite is still there to watch the Irish team and to watch,
but, you know,
these professional athletes.
Who went to that? Kids went to that.
Yeah, well, that's it.
There was very few kids in the stadium.
Well, the schoolboy ticket was, what, 40, 50 euro? I'm not surprised.
Well, that's in the schoolboy section.
Yeah.
But, like, if I was to bring my daughter to it, yeah, I'd have to pay £100 to bring her.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just it's. I mean, whatever about recession, even if the at the height of the Celtic Tiger, you'd want to have some hard neck to be spending €100 to bring a kid to a match.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, on to matters on the pitch. Like, very poor. No, tactics were atrocious, I thought. We kicked about 25% of our possession, but you can kick the ball all you want, but you got to make them good kicks. I thought our chase was poor. We kicked constantly. The ball was kicked to us and we kicked it straight into touch, and our lineout was decimated.
There was not one single sector of the team that functioned at anywhere near the level it's capable of functioning at. And it's not a matter of blaming individuals, because, you know, you could blame 15 individuals. It's a matter of blaming every single unit. I mean, the lineout failed to function. A successful lineout is a function of a minimum of three players, the thrower, the lifter and the jumper. Lineout was a complete disaster.
I thought the calling was poor. Because they constantly tried to throw it over the back or to the middle.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to throw, if your lineout's under pressure, throw it to
straight two. Straight ball at two. Yeah, absolutely, you know, yeah.
Like, it's very difficult for, no matter how good you are, to defend a low, hard ball at two.
Well, it's entirely possible that the Irish pack had subconsciously bought into the mythos of Backies Botha and Victor Matfield, you know, and that they were trying to vary the lineout because they were scared of what would happen if they didn't. What they were scared of actually happened anyway. I mean, we lost 50% of our lineouts. I mean, it's been a long time, and I'm going back to England of Ackford and Dooley, that we lost 50% of our lineouts.
Yeah.
But again, you see, it's not about one player. It's about the whole system failure. Scrums were the same. I mean, we were getting reamed on the scrums, and it's not a matter of O'Healy was bad or Buckley was bad. I mean, they were all bad. I mean, honest to God, you could throw a stick at a bad player and hope to hit a bad player in the Irish team and you would have hit one. Then, of course, because the ball that was coming from the pack was poor and it was slowed down by Redden, who did not have a good game.
Mm.
Then Sexton was getting bad ball and was indecisive with that bad ball. He was shoveling it out to the backs. I mean, Darcy tried to hit up a few yards, but there was no real cutting edge. Bod looked somewhat disinterested. Wingers never got an opportunity. And sometimes they did. Luke Fitzgerald overran the ball a couple of times and did stuff that he shouldn't really have done.
We were very frantic, you know.
Yeah,
there was no structure. We were just trying to run everything at 100 miles an hour. Nothing was working.
It was that old Eddie O'Sullivan thing about running around with your head on fire.
Yeah. Like, everything that they tried to do failed.
Yeah.
When O'Driscoll made a fantastic tackle just about 5 metres from their line, he didn't release. Definitely penalty. When Keane Healy took a tap ball to himself, he knocked it on.
Mm-hmm.
When Jamie Heaslip made a break and he made about 30 metres, he got turned over. You know, everything that they tried to do failed.
Oh, it was complete and utter systems failure. It was, if you'll pardon my French, and to use some, with a Call of Duty Black Ops out today, some Vietnam vernacular, it was a complete and utter clusterfuck.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, they've made 10 changes now for the Samoa match.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because the performances last Saturday of guys who might have thought they were nailed on has opened the door again.
I think Sexton's under pressure.
I think Sexton's under pressure.
I think Stringer's probably won his place back.
Stringer should have started anyway. We said that last week.
We did, but, you know, when you think he was second choice club scrum half 3 months ago, and now he's starting for Ireland, and he will probably start against the Lovelacks.
He had lost form maybe 2 years ago. Down in Munster. I mean, even his famous pass was scattergun. I mean, there was no accuracy or there was plenty of pace, but it was flying everywhere. But he has since got that back. But I think that McGann prefers an athlete rather than a technician. But certainly, I think he should have started last week. He's been playing very, very well. I would have actually rested him this week because I would have been keeping him for the All Blacks game. I would have had him as a nailed-on starter. And I would have given, I don't know, Isaac Boss or somebody a run today against Samoa, where it's not really going to make that much of a difference. But I think Stringer has to be nailed on for the game against the All Blacks. O'Gara now has a chance to restate his claim. He had lost his position fairly. Now he has a chance to regain it fairly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all to play for. I mean, the All Blacks position is the least of it. I mean, we're going into a Six Nations and then into a World Cup.
Four Heineken Cup matches in between is going to dictate who's our starting out half for the Six Nations, and that will probably lead into the World Cup.
Oh, I think so. I think whoever finishes the Six Nations, and unless somebody has a complete nightmare in the remaining games of the season, and whoever finishes the Six Nations is going to start the World Cup, and that's the way it should be, actually.
Yeah,
it should be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know people go on about development, and I said it last week, we don't need to develop any more players unless a bolter comes out of somewhere, like like Luke Marshall or whatever, I mentioned him again, and Jamie Hagan mentioned him again, unless a bolter comes out of somewhere, we don't really need to develop any players. We're into a year, it's less than a year to the World Cup now. This time next year, the World Cup's over. So, you know, it's about manoeuvring foreign players into their best position.
There's an opportunity now for some of the guys that were peripheral last week.
Yes.
Who have now a great chance. Cronin has a good chance. Devin Toner has a great chance.
Yeah, I think both of those guys have really...
And Sean O'Brien has a very good chance of actually starting against the All Blacks.
I think Devin Toner has a good chance of propelling himself into Kidney's plans. Now, obviously, all things been equal with everybody fit and playing to form. Obviously, O'Connell and O'Callaghan would be the first choice partnership. But there's a slot on the bench there. I mean, Mick O'Driscoll has been filling it, and great professional that he is. He's not an international class.
Well, I think that was shown now the weekend.
So Devin Toner has an opportunity there, and so indeed does Dunnock Ryan, but he has to get games from Munster if he wants to progress. But that's as an aside. Sean Cronin, I think, is the guy with the most to both gain and lose, because if he gets that Irish jersey and continues to play well, I mean, it's going to be very hard to shift him out of it, with Best not playing so well and Jerry Flannery not playing at all.
Mm. And Luke's gone to fullback.
I mean, people say it's his best position. I'm not so sure about that. I think he's best used as a strike runner on the wing. Somebody who can come inside and create something. I think that's where he's best. But you know, he'll have his chance. I mean, we should get. I mean, Samoa, for all their worthiness and their physicality, shouldn't present too much of a problem to the pack that's been picked. I mean, it's a strong pack. Mm. I mean, every unit of the pack has strengthened it. I mean, you've got Court and obviously John Hayes. Court's got over a dozen caps at this stage. John Hayes is, you know, 100-odd caps. And Dunnock O'Callaghan partnering an inexperienced at international level, but experienced at provincial level.
And he's played very well this season.
And has played very well. And we've got a strong back row. I mean, Dennis Leamy's a very strong player and is playing well. Jamie Heaslip, obviously, and Sean O'Brien's been the real form back row in Ireland this season.
Yeah.
So that pack should provide plenty of go-forward ball to our backs.
Do you think that under Kidney that they nearly have to lose the jersey? You know, the guy in the possession nearly has to have a disastrous game before the form player can get his game.
I've always thought that in terms of loyalty to players and not necessarily putting form at the top of the list of priorities, that Declan Kidney and Eddie O'Sullivan are very, very similar.
I think a lot of coaches are like that, though.
Well, a lot of coaches are loyal to the guys who win games for them. I mean, it's... And if Declan Kidney, those guys have won games for him over a period of 10, 15 years, of course he's going to be loyal to them. I mean, those are the guys who've...
Well, you look at, say, Wallace, you know?
Yeah, well, that's...
Like, that was a big call that he made. That was a big call,
It was a big call to pick Wallace in the first place, and it's a big call to drop him.
Mm.
Because David Wallace has done for Declan Kidney so many times in the past, you know, heroic deeds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is natural for a coach to be conservative. But at the same time, you look at the likes of Robbie Deans and you look at Graham Henry and even that mad lad in South Africa. I mean, they're not... Conservatism wouldn't be one of their traits.
No, they do bring... They do give youth its head.
Yes, they do.
I mean, you look at James O'Connor. He's brought through as an 18-year-old.
Well, it's not even just James O'Connor. I mean, Australia and New Zealand rugby is packed with guys who are 20 and 21 and have got 20 and 30 caps.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, look at David Pocock.
Yeah.
David Pocock was the young blade when they toured last year, and now he's a fixture in that side.
But isn't it great, actually, that Australia and Samoa are actually going back to the old days?
Yeah, it's nice to see tours back.
Tour.
It's nice to see Leicester going back to the old days of letters ABCs, on their back. Yeah,
absolutely, yeah. You know, but I mean, I just think it's a great thing, and I'm glad that they're starting, that the IRB is bringing it back, you know, when, say, I think it's next season, or the season after the World Cup, that when we go on tour, we're going to start playing provincial matches then in Australia, New Zealand and South Africa.
I think as a player, your reputation is made by what you do on tour. It always has been in rugby. And the absence of tours, I think, has hurt the game in terms of building up personalities and building up the mythos around players that existed about Willie John or Moss Keane, God rest him, or these great players that we grew up as heroes for us. A lot of that, the mythos around them was built up on tour.
And it gives young guys a chance to let off fire extinguishers in hotels.
Well, that's it as well. You know, I mean, but you look at Keith Wood and Johnny Bell went down to Australia there in, was it 89? No,
94.
Was it 94?
92.
As young blades. I mean, nobody'd heard of them. And they went straight into the test team and, You know, Keith Wood went on to be, well, Keith Wood. Yeah, and Johnny Bell had a great career as well, blighted by injury, but he was a superb player.
Same thing happened with Rico in 1999.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, players have an opportunity on tour because it's a slightly larger party. Coaches get to see them up close for a longer period of time. So they get to stake their claim, I think, better. So, you know, maybe part of the conservatism we were talking about earlier is because coaches just see the 15s that are put on the pitch on match day. They don't get to see 17 and 18 in training day in, day out. Whereas on a tour, when you've got maybe 40 players or, you know, however many you bring, you get to see those guys in action day out. You get to observe them as people as well as just the 80 minutes.
So your prediction anyway for the weekend?
Oh, I expect Ireland to win by 20 points.
20 points, right. I'll hold you to that. And Dave, a few notable retirees this week, Fogarty and McCormack.
Yeah, it's sad to see them go. I mean, you look at the great days that we talk about of Leinster rugby over the last 5-6 years, you know, Bath in the Rec, Toulouse in the quarter final, Heineken Cup final, and who's on the pitch in every single one of them is Ronnie McCormack, you know. I mean, he's been there totally unsung, but he's been there for us every time we've needed to call him. He's done a job for us, never let us down. And I think in 100 years' time, when kids are looking at pictures of Leinster's Heineken Cup winning team, first Heineken Cup winning team, the first one, yeah. And they'll go and they'll see Ronnie McCormack's face there, and deservedly so. And I think that's, you know, a fitting tribute. Again, and Fogarty as well. It's sad to see him go.
Shocking interview, wasn't it, in the paper?
Yeah, it was. It really was. It brings it home. I mean, in fairness to him, George Hook has been bringing this up for a number of years now, that playing an international rugby match has a similar level of impact as a heavyweight boxing match.
Or a car crash.
And guys, heavyweight boxers are only expected to fight maybe once or twice a year. Mm. Rugby players do that 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times a year. And then the upper levels of the Heineken Cup, which is international, that's standard as well.
Concussions in the season. You know?
I mean, it's something that's going to have to be looked at. The medical procedures are going to have to be tighter. The other side of it is that players are not willing to admit their injuries. No. Because players want to play.
How many times have we seen somebody who looks absolutely poleaxed get up, either continue to play on or been helped to the sideline? Yeah.
And then pushing the medical team away because they want to get back on.
And then we're told, well, he had a shoulder injury.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's quite clear that the guy's got a belt in the head.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that's going to have to be looked at and going to have to be tightened up. I mean, you can't have guys, you know, not able to function once they retire. They have to be able to enjoy the fruits that their efforts as professional rugby players brought them. And you see somebody like John Fogarty, who's been a great servant to Irish rugby. I mean, he's played with Munster and he's played with Connacht, mm-hmm. you know, and played with Leinster with distinction. I mean, he's been such a passionate player for us, sometimes overly passionate, as the Connacht lads found out. But, you know, he'll be a big loss to us. He's a very good player, very good hooker and fine singer.
Well, on that, we want to wish the two lads the very best of luck in their future lives. And thanks a million for watching again. Cheers.